Well, again, welcome back to Crossroads. My name is Brian, lead pastor. If you're joining us online, just welcome to us. Glad that you're with us here this middle of the week. But we are beginning the series called Dear God. And I don't know about you, but I kind of was saying those same words a couple of days ago when I said, oh my goodness, it's August. Like, just what happened, right? It's August right now. And that means that, like, this week, my kids go back to school, right? You know? Yeah. Are you happy for me or my kids? Like, I don't even know right now. So, but what's so confusing to me is, like, when they got out of school, I'm like, yes, kids are on vacation. And then they're coming, like, yes, they're going back to school, you know? So you're probably like, Pastor B, do you want them at home or do you want them at school? And the answer is yes, right? Just right in the middle. That's exactly where I want them to be, you know? So we're getting ready for school, but at the same time, I've got these, like, butterflies in my stomach because it's a pretty crazy world I'm sending them back into. It's a pretty crazy, broken world that we're sending them into. And I just start praying for all kinds of things. Maybe you do the same thing. Pray for their teachers. Pray for the schools that they're at. I pray for the lessons that they're being taught. I pray for the environment that they're in. I pray for things that I don't even know what I should be praying for. So I pray for that anyway to cover it all. Because I just know that I'm sending them into a world that's certainly broken. And had you been here Thursday, you would have heard me say an example of, like, just here up in Gilroy, we can see that this is a broken world. In the span of 2 days, we have Gilroy and El Paso and Dayton. And you just look and you say, my goodness gracious, what is going on? And so the thing is that we see this brokenness in our world and we wonder what we can do. And I just love how God has kind of orchestrated this. And I mean, months ago, we planned this series and we had even talked about doing some things. And one of the things that we had planned on doing is praying for our kids before they go back to school. And so we have a couple of really cool things I'd encourage you to maybe take a part in. One is a new school year events kind of thing. What we want you to do is next Sunday, what we want you to do is wherever your kids are going to go to school at, or your grandkids or kids that you really like or whatever it might be, we want you to go to that school afterward, literally on Sunday, after you're dismissed, go to school, and we want you to pray over the school. That's all we want you to do, just pray over the school. You can get friends together if you want to, or maybe it's just you and your family, and you go to the school and pray for it. So we want you to start there and to pray for it. Second thing that we're going to do, though, is at the end of August, you'll see in your bulletin a chance for you and your families to come and just worship together, sing, and also pray for them at the same time, kind of worshiping together. First through fourth grade will be downstairs. Fifth through sixth will be upstairs. All that's in your bulletin. But again, I think it's God's divine moments for us to pray for our kids, and so we're gonna do that. And as we do that, there is a big part of us that wishes that we could have confirmation that God heard our prayer. Like when we pray, that we want to know that at least God got the message. For instance, like when you send a text message to somebody or a direct message on a social media, you know, they have those little things that says, it says seen and read, you know what I'm talking about? And when you see those, you're like, all right, now I know y'all got that, you know? So there's like no doubt in it. That's why I got like a bunch of little dots on my text messages, because if you touch it, you're toast. You know, so you just hold on for a little bit, right? Because it's seen in red. You're like, whoa, 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 I want to know. And so when we think about God, we're like, hey, I just want you to make sure that you've seen this and read that. That's what we'll tell ourselves. But deeper inside, we want more than just that. Because I think what's worse than the seen in red icons is this bad boy, right? You know what I'm saying? This one right here. You send that text message out and then this pops up, you might as well shut down the day. You know, right? You could be having dinner with your wife. You could care less. You're just looking at that phone like, what are they going to say? What are they going to say, right? Because this says that they're typing something, that an answer is coming and you want to know what's happening. See, this is what we want to start to see from God, isn't it? We want to have a little text bubble that's saying God's on it and he's going to respond to it. So whether you're sending kids back to school or not, you and I both know that there's some things that we want to hear from God about. Maybe for you, it's a hard season of life. Maybe it's a health concern. Could be a job change, a relationship that's hard, a hard season with your kids. Or you might just look at this world and say, where in the world are you at, God? And for some of us, we may feel like we've been looking at this text bubble for a long time. Seems like we're not even sure that he's even like listening, right? That we're not even sure he's going to say anything. And we look and we look and we look. And that's when we talk about prayer, it can be so hard for people. Because they think that, you know, that there's this glass ceiling that our prayers go to, and God's above it, and, you know, laughing at us as we're begging for an answer, and we feel like there's no way that he's ever going to say anything. But guys, what we need to know is that Satan is involved in this whole thing. And by the way, his entire job is he wants to keep us disconnected from God. He just wants to keep us disconnected from God. In fact, he'll try a few things to keep you disconnected from God. First thing he'll say is, God doesn't hear you. Like, he's going to remind you of all your past stuff, all the things that you've done. And he's going to tell you that all of that has clogged God's ears. And there's no divine Q-tip big enough to be able to crank that stuff out so God can hear you again. So he says, don't even bother praying to God. He doesn't hear you. Second thing he's going to tell you is that God's too busy. I think of this as like the Santa Claus theory. You know, there's all these good little boys and girls all around the world, and those prayers are more important than mine. How could God possibly get to all of them? So I'll wait a little bit until God isn't as busy, and then I'll pray to him, which we all know never happens. So he'll tell us that he doesn't hear us, God's too busy. Then the third thing Satan will say, God thinks you're too messy. So he's going to remind you, you know what? You can't come to God with dirty hands. It's God, for crying out loud. And so he tells you, you got to clean yourself up before you could come to God ever. So what we think is that we need to increase our moral compass just a little bit so we can get gooder before we go to God. Now, the reality is that will never happen. That just never will happen. We'll try the best that we can, but it won't. And that's why I love what Saint Benedict said. He said, if we wait until we are perfect to pray, we will never get started. So maybe today what we need to do is, before we give up on prayer altogether, maybe we at least need to know the facts about Satan and remember some things. Number one, Satan is a liar. Like, he is a liar. The only thing he wants, anything he's telling you right now, is to harm you, not to help you. Again, he wants to disconnect you from God. That's the only thing a liar does, is he lies. But we should probably also remember that Satan has a sandal print on his foot from where Jesus kicked him when he defeated him on the cross. So Satan has no authority because he's already defeated. So if we can remember he's a liar, we can remember that he doesn't have anything good in store for us and that he's defeated, might we start to think about prayer just a little bit better? And maybe armed with that, we can remember that God isn't waiting for perfect prayers, but for us to be purposefully praying, that we should just be doing it. Because if you look at this Bible, you're going to find so many prayers in here. Every pocket of every page, you're going to find prayers in there, from Moses to Abraham to David to Elijah to Elisha to Isaiah to Peter to Paul to Jesus. There's prayer everywhere in there. But I think it's interesting that one prayer seems to rise to the top over all the other prayers. And you might have heard it before. You might have even said it before. You might have even been in some traditions where they talk about it all the time. It's the only thing that you ever say. It's called the Lord's Prayer. Found in two books in the Bible, the Gospels of Matthew and Luke. Luke, I think, is more my kind of guy because he gives us the Cliff Notes version of the prayer, kind of like what I used to do in college when I would study for stuff, Cliff Notes. That's what I could do. But then Matthew, on the other hand, gives us the unabridged version. He gives us all of the things. And so that's where we'll dive into more today. We'll be able to look at the unabridged version. So if you have your Bibles with you, Matthew chapter 6 is where we're going to be at. Or the app that I mentioned earlier, open that up. All the scriptures are already there for you. We'd love to turn there, Matthew chapter 6. Because when you turn to Matthew 6, you're going to find out that Jesus actually prays in the middle of his most famous sermon ever. And that sermon is called the Sermon on the Mount. Now, why do they call it the Sermon on the Mount? It's because Jesus was preaching from a mountain. Okay, that's as creative as they get, okay? Sermon on the Mount, that's why they call it that. But here's something interesting you need to know about the prayer. Because before Jesus gets to that prayer in chapter 6, he's done five other chapters worth of stuff. And what he's already covered is all the Beatitudes. He's already covered being salt and light in the world. Oh, by the way, he's done some light stuff on adultery and murder and divorce and our word being our bond and an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth and loving your enemies and giving to the needy. That's a lot of ground to cover. And it's only after all of that is discussed that Jesus then talks about prayer. But as a preacher, I kind of get it. Like, there's times where I'll be preaching and stuff and I can just tell, like, you just need like a breather. Like, you're not, like, it's all kind of hitting you at the same time. And I automatically think of a basketball coach, don't you? they have those like little things in their hip pocket called timeouts. So if you're getting worked over by a team or something like that, they'll call a timeout to regroup. Or if they look out and they see them kind of like fatigued and exhausted, they'll call a timeout just to kind of give you a little breather and get you back in the game. So maybe the Lord's Prayer is like a 30-second timeout in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount. Maybe that's why he did it. Well, I think there's a little bit more to it. I think he's a little bit more strategic with that. Because again, if you unpack it, you see that Jesus is taught about all this heavy stuff, adult, murdery, all this kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden he talks about prayer. It's as if he's saying, all this stuff is really heavy in a broken world. So if you want to know how to handle that, then you need to know how to pray. And that if we want to know in our broken world what we need to do first, he's going to say, you need to begin to pray. He needed to teach them the power of prayer for them to have any chance. Because understanding prayer is actually really, really important, not only just for us personally, but for our connection with God. We need to understand it's our connection with God. So before Jesus talks about what prayer is, he starts off by saying, hey, this is what prayer isn't. And listen, if you're not a Christian here today, I would argue looking at this might encourage you in a whole lot of ways, because Jesus calls some religious people out. Look in verse 5 of chapter 6. He says, and when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. Now, what I love about this is that you need to notice the directive Jesus gives. He says, when you pray, not if you pray, not if you feel like praying, not if you get around to praying, but when you pray. So being a Christian involves prayer. I've read this great book by N.T. Wright. You'll hear a lot about him during this series. And he actually said this once. He said, if we are serious at all about our Christian commitment, we will want to learn and grow in prayer. So prayer really isn't an option. It's not like an added, like, spiritual a la carte thing that you can get at the Disneyland buffet. Like, it's not how that works. No. Now, what it is, prayer is part of what makes you a follower of Jesus. It's part of what he keeps us connected to God himself. It's through prayer. So God is also looking, if you didn't know, you should know this, that God is also looking for some text message bubbles too. And it's from you and me. That if we need to stay connected with God, God's looking and saying, hey, are my kids ever gonna answer me? Are they ever gonna call out to me? And I wanna hear from them. Tell me what's on their hearts. He's anxiously waiting to hear from you and me. God's desire is for you and I to talk to him, especially in a world that is so broken. That's why Jesus makes a point to tell us how to pray, what it is. But he shows us that prayer is an intimate connection with God. It's not about being a showman and using such big words that not even those spelling bee kids can spell them. You know, it's not about that at all. In fact, he calls out the religious people. He says, hey, you religious people stand up in the synagogues all the time and praying really loud. You know, you're getting your reward. You're not connecting with God. You're just making sure everybody looks at you. And maybe you're thinking the same thing. You're thinking, well, you know, those religious people, they're the ones that do the praying. All those hyper-spiritual people, they're the ones that can do that. But what Jesus is saying here is that praying is talking to God like you would a friend. It's intentionally connecting with him with your words and in your life. He's saying it's for everybody. It's for everybody. Which is why I find it hard to understand how we have forgotten these initial words of Jesus. Because somehow I think that we've taken the Lord's Prayer and we've looked at it as this mantra that if we say over and over and over, it'll forgive us of our sins and Beetlejuice will come out of somewhere. You know, we just think if we do it over and over. Or we think it's the only prayer that you can have. It's the only prayer. Which is hard because if you look closely at what Jesus' word said, that's not what he intended it all to be. Look again at Matthew 6, 9. He says, this then is how you should pray. So what this is Jesus is not being prescriptive, he's being descriptive. Not prescriptive, descriptive. He says, this is how we should pray. And what I love about Jesus too is also how he begins it, because he says this, he says, Our Father is how he begins it. And we'll rush past this so quickly. Our Father who art in heaven, we'll just keep, we'll forget the first two lines of what he said. And Jesus, it's very important. Jesus is reaching out to his dad. In the same breath, he's also demonstrating to you and I on how we connect with God. He's saying, it's okay to say, dear God. it's okay to say, dear dad. You can reach out to him in that way. And so it's from this position of vulnerability and childlike faith when you reach out to your dad that we look into this prayer to be able to understand how we unpack, how we answer some of life's most difficult questions. Again, the great N.T. Wright would say it this way. He says, that's why calling God Father is the greatest act of faith, of holy boldness, of risk. Saying our Father in boldness, the sheer cheek of walking in the presence of the living and almighty God and saying, hi, Dad. It is the boldness, the sheer total risk of saying quietly, please, may I too be considered an apprentice son. It means signing on for the kingdom of God. So through the Lord's Prayer, we get to unpeel the heart of God and seek to answer the most difficult questions in life, beginning with, dear God, why is the world so broken? And we know it's broken because every time we look at our news feed or on the TV, we see more kids being hurt, wars being fought, governments feuding, walls being built, animals becoming extinct, marriages falling apart, social media stalking, body shaming, bullying, school shootings, and so many other things that are tearing at the very fabric of the world, stretching it to its limits. And regardless of if you believe in God or not here today, you can at least agree that there is a taste of tension in the air almost all the time. Which is why from time to time, you'll see these pressure points burst. A riot will break out. Arguments take place. People start to hurt each other. This is just, it's such a need for a release of pressure that's being built up in our culture. But as Christians, we just say, well, I wonder what we can do. Like, what can we do? What are we supposed to do? How can we bring peace to the world? And guess what? Our initial response is we want to try to do something or say something. Normally, it's what we'll do. And that's when you see somehow, some way, well-intentioned Christians in front of ill-intentioned TV cameras saying ill-timed things that leave you feeling ill all the time. Or sometimes you'll see like Christians just run into it in the middle of the fray and say, I'll fix everything. And they never talk to anybody. They never talk to anybody in the middle of it. And they make things even worse all the time. They do that. Someone once said this. They said the right thing at a wrong time is a wrong thing. I think it's important to remember. So what do we learn from a broken world through this prayer from Jesus, this Lord's Prayer? Well, let's look first at this first line that Jesus had just said. Again, looking in verse 9 and 10. He says, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So the first thing we need to take a look at is he says hallowed. Now, that seems like a pretty crazy word. What does that mean, PB? Well, hallowed just means holy. It just means holy. Set apart. God is holy. He's set apart. Then the rest of what we need to do is follow the yours. So we follow the yours. It says your name, your kingdom, your will. So what we need to understand here, it's all about God's name, God's kingdom, God's will. See, we first must find and understand that to heal a broken world, we have to bring them back to God. Where we get lost is when we make it all about me. It's all about me. It's as if we say, well, no, it's not your name, God. It's actually my name. By the way, we live our life. And it's not your kingdom. Oh, goodness, no. It's my kingdom. And not your will. Goodness gracious, no. It is my will. My, it's all about me. It's our things, our words, our posts, our ministries, our whatever. We want to win people to what we want to win them to so that we are the ones that get the glory. But God says, listen, that if we posture ourselves in prayer to seek and help the broken world, then we need to win them to the glory of God. Jesus actually said this once. He said, what good will it be for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? So many of us will lose our souls in the pursuit of the kingdom of me, hoping that we will somehow be able to put the world back together. But guess what? We were never meant to carry the weight of this world. Jesus is the only one. Only God can. Which is why the last part of the section of the prayer is so important. He says, on earth as it is in heaven. You see, after we realize that it's God's name, God's kingdom, God's will that will bring the world back together, then we can understand what we need to do. And our job, Jesus says, is to remember that to win the world, we need to live on earth as it is in heaven. That's our responsibility. my friend and mentor, Pastor Tim Harlow, would say it this way. He says we need to bring heaven to earth and earth to heaven. That the way to fix a broken world is to bring the love of God and show them the power of the resurrected Jesus in their life. To fix the world we live in, we need to be winning it to Jesus. I wonder if there's just this one idea that we could sit on more than anything else today. It's this one idea that says to fix a broken world, we need to win to the kingdom of he, not me. The kingdom of he and not me. Now, let me just be straight up honest with you. This is really hard for me. Really, really hard for me. Because if I'm honest with you here today, when I get home from a long day at work, the last thing that I want to do is help my kids with homework. Be honest, I don't want to help them with bed. I don't want to do shower time. I don't want to help make dinner. I don't want to do any of it. What I want to do is I want to sit in my comfy couch, chair. I want to watch about 2-3 hours of baseball highlights until my bum goes numb, and then I want to go to bed. Straight up, that's what I want to do. Anybody? I'm the only sinner in the room. Okay, all right. That's all right. Because I love me some me, right? I love the kingdom of me. I don't care what you want. I want what I want. But then I got married. Woo! And when I married Cherie, I said, I do to the kingdom of we, of Cherie and I. So all of a sudden my kingdom got a little smaller and it wasn't about me, it was about us. Oh, then I had 2 kids. Woo! Tell you what, kingdom of me got smaller, right? Again, it's not about me anymore. It's not about me anymore, it's about my family. So I tell you right now, I don't buy the things I want to do and go the places I want to go. I don't do any of that stuff because the kingdom of we is more important than the kingdom of me. Now, short of my relationship with Jesus, I will sacrifice anything that I have to in order to support my family and love them, whatever it might be. But in order for that to happen, the kingdom of me has got to get small. The kingdom of we has got to get really, really big. Can I just tell you that's the same thing that needs to happen in our world? That the kingdom of me, the selfishness of me and you and everybody needs to get smaller so that the kingdom of he can get infinitely bigger. Now, does this mean that we don't help the homeless? Does that mean that we don't give to the church anymore? Does that mean that we don't help that person in need? Does that mean that when we see a neighbor that's in crisis, that we just go over their house and sit Indian style in front of it and wear ill-fitting clothing and look miserable and read Leviticus for days on end? No. Not what you do. What you do is sometimes when we're talking about heaven to earth and earth to heaven, sometimes that looks like a casserole that you make for the lady that just had a baby. Sometimes that looks like barbecue in your backyard, inviting some people over. Sometimes that means going out and cliff jumping with some friends of yours and just having a good old time, right? Hopefully coming back alive, right? Sometimes it means that you pay the utility bill of the person that's having a hard time at work. Sometimes it just means that you sit down and be quiet over a cup of coffee. Sometimes, check it out, sometimes it means not being a weird Christian and actually having a conversation with somebody. Then they'll make them wig out. Don't be weird. In fact, I'm telling you that as Christians, if we do more of that, I think more people are going to hear us. Now, that means that we need to be the ones bringing heaven to earth so that more people can go from earth to heaven. So here, this is what this means. Let's bring it back to Crossroads here for a second. That means you have to answer some questions. And how you answer is going to determine some things. Are we a church? Are you being a Taggart Christian that's willing to do something with what you hear each and every week? Or are you just spiritually obese and you come here and you consume spiritual calories and then you leave and you never do anything with them? How you answer that question will determine whether you are heaven to earth and earth to heaven or not. How you answer that is so important. Because there's no doubt that our world is broken and there's no doubt that we all are saying, how do we fix it? It's an old story about a guy that was sitting in his chair watching the game, reading his Bible, just doing that. And his son comes up to him and says, Daddy, Daddy, I want to play. And the daddy just wanted to watch football. He just didn't want to watch. He's like, no, another time. He says, Daddy, no, I want to play. that he says, fine. And he looks over, he grabs a magazine, rips it out, sees a picture of the world. He tears it into a bunch of pieces and he kind of throws it over there. He says, hey, you put that back together, come back and then I'll play with you. Dad thought, got him. That's at least halftime before he figures that out. 2 minutes later, boy comes back. Daddy, you fixed it. Picks the picture up. Sure enough, tape all over the place, world right back in place. He says, I really can't be that mad. Like, I mean, that's pretty awesome. Like, how'd you do that? Little boy says, pretty easy. On the back of that picture is a picture of Jesus. All I did was put his face back together and the world was back together. See, I think what we need to remember is that if we want to have the world, the broken world, get fixed and come back together, then we need to look to Jesus. We need Jesus if we ever want to see order out of the disorder. We need Jesus in us so we can bring heaven to earth and earth to heaven. Let me just tell you the reality. The world that we live in right now is not the world that God designed it to be. It just isn't. When God created the earth back in Genesis chapter 1 in the Garden of Eden, he created it on purpose, for a purpose, and it was perfect. All those things. And then sin enters the world, and all of a sudden you hear this snap, and it got broken. And with every sinful breath that you and I take, we make it more and more and more and more broken. And it's become become unrecognizable to how God had designed it to be. Unrecognizable. Because now we're covered in all this stuff. And can you imagine a father just looking at that and just wishing that he could see his kids again and just heartbroken at what's happened and saying, I wish there needs to be a way for me to be right with them again. And I want you to factor all that in. Think about this with me for a moment. Cody's mom loved him unconditionally. But you and I both know that there are times when she probably cried a lot. There's probably some really hard moments in their life. Some moments where, in her honest moments, that she probably said, I just wish that Cody could live a life like all the other normal little boys. I just wish there was something that I could do to help him. And I just wonder if one day, at her wit's end maybe, she puts Cody down in the living room. She turns on some music and she just goes back in the kitchen just to gain a little bit of sanity, just to be able to regroup, maybe to cry, who knows? And then all of a sudden out of the other room, you just hear the sound. You hear this music and she kind of tiptoes around and she looks around the corner to see her son singing. The most beautiful music that she had ever heard coming out of her son. And then in that moment, she says, that's my son. That's who I knew was in there. He had all this stuff against him, but oh, I knew that my Cody could sing. And his life was there. And in that moment, she weeps tears of joy because she says, that's my son. That's my Cody. And I said, Cody didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't like he sinned or some craziness like that. No, it's just a broken world. But can I tell you something? That God can see you the same way. That in our sin and the stuff that we've done that we know or that we don't know, it has changed us from who God had designed us to be. And we're held back from him. But do you know that when Jesus comes in your life, you can sing. When all the brokenness in your life gets covered by Jesus, you can sing. And then God looks at you and says, that's my daughter. That's my son. I knew it was inside there, but now it's out. And do you know why? It's because of Jesus. that Jesus takes broken things and puts them back together again. Jesus takes the mute and lets them speak. He takes the deaf and lets them hear. He lets the blind and lets them see. Jesus takes all that stuff and he just says, give it to me. And then when we do, he says, that's my kids. That's my kids right there. So my friends, I just tell you right now, if you want to heal a broken world, Jesus. If you want to heal a broken life, it's Jesus. And if we are able to somehow, some way, make the kingdom of me small, the kingdom of he greater, this world will be different. It will be different. Your world, my world, the world will be different because of Jesus. And when we do that, then heaven to earth, earth to heaven can happen. All of a sudden, the brokenness comes back together when you put it together with Jesus.